Hi there, everybody. Welcome to the Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the upcoming book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. This is episode 71 of the Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I become a great principal? I also interview principals, school, and educational leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within their schools. In today's episode, we're talking with high school principal, Mr. Craig DeYoung. Mr. DeYoung is the principal of a high school and as such wears a multitude of hats. He is a jack of all trades and a master of some. His area of expertise involves building positive relationships with all stakeholders. We'll get into that in a few minutes, but before we do so, we'll get into his origin story. Mr. DeYoung, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Like I said, we're going to talk about your school and your area of expertise, but before we do so, how did you even get into education, and how did you find yourself from, what is it, Minnesota to New Mexico?
Yes, sir. Well, that is an interesting one. I grew up in the Minneapolis area of Minnesota, went to a large suburban high school, 3,000 kids, 10 through 12. I think my graduating class was 850, and that's not everybody making it to graduation, so there was more in my class than that. So it was a large school, lots of opportunities for a lot of different activities in high school during the early 70s, as you might imagine. But, you know, athletics was kind of my escape into things that I was good at and things that I was good at. And so I played all three sports, football, basketball, baseball, and then at some point eventually made a decision to pursue baseball after high school, looked around. We had been on vacation to New Mexico, my family had, and thought that that would be a good area. I wasn't keen on the idea of playing baseball anymore in spring in Minnesota. Not exactly conducive to
it sounds cold.
Warming up your arm.
Right. So you were a pitcher.
No, but I didn't need any more practice at shivering. So. I had done that enough, so I looked for warmer climates, and it came down to between Texas Lutheran, which is a small Lutheran college in central Texas, kind of east central Texas, to Western New Mexico University, which is in Silver City, New Mexico.
Okay.
Which is in the southwestern part of the state. So I chose Western, and was lucky enough to receive a scholarship and played baseball there for 4 years.
Nice.
And then started to teach shortly after graduation in Silver City. So that's kind of how I got to New Mexico.
What was the catalyst to become a teacher?
You know, my teachers and my coaches, especially my coaches, really had a big impact on me in high school, and that's all of them. You know, the football coach, the basketball coach, and the baseball coach, and all of them I happen to have as teachers. And so, you know, they all had a big impact. And I think the biggest impact that they had on me was how they treated me, not just in sports, you know, during the season, but all the time during the high school, and, you know, and how concerned they were for my success and how I was doing and those things. And I think that made a big impression on me. And I pretty much knew when I was a junior in high school that if I got to college, that's what I was going to do, is go into education and do, you know, be a teacher and coach. So,
okay.
And that's what I did.
My basketball coach had a tremendous impact on me. I still didn't want to be a teacher because that was kind of the least cool thing that I could think of. But eventually, obviously, I got into the business. But, man, the impact of positive male role models in school can be tremendous.
It is. It is. And so, and I had a strong, you know, disciplined dad as well, but, you know, the coaches just had an influence on me that it's really hard to explain unless you look through it, as it were. So,
yeah. So how did you get from teacher to principal? Was that always a plan, or did you just kind of keep working your way and into it, or how did that happen?
I began my master's Well, shortly after college, I guess I had been teaching for a couple of years. And I think at New Mexico at the time, you know, they wanted you to at least begin your master's or program in a certain amount of time. So,
right.
I don't know, it's a long time ago, but so I started my master's, and with Western New Mexico still, you know, in town, very convenient to take courses in the summer. And so I did that, and in 85, I got my master's in school administration. And then, and actually got certified. In those days, you still had to take a test, got certified. And then we moved like that year or a year later, we moved back up to Minnesota, my wife at the time and two daughters. And so then I got a job in a school district in south of Minneapolis. And I was there for, well, a total of 16 years, but for 10 years, I just taught and coached, kind of like I did in Silver City. And then I finally did get an administrative job, the activities director, which is in charge of all activities, well, actually 7 through 12, athletic and non-athletic. So it was a pretty big job
right.
in a big district. So
right. That's a lot of
that
work.
That was fun and quite the learning experience.
So you bounced from Minneapolis to New Mexico, back home, and then back to New Mexico.
Well, actually, in between there was a stop in California.
You've been all over the map.
I have been. I have been all over the map. I have been to, I've worked in several school districts in three different states. And so I have a lot of experience dealing with people in a lot of different ways and dealing with students in a lot of different areas. And one thing I'll tell you is that, you know, students aren't too different from one place to another. You know, their names might be different, their environments and, you know, maybe where they come from might be different, but, you know, pretty much kids are kids, you know? So
agreed.
I haven't found too many differences with them.
What, so in all your travels, what has been the most difficult, experience that you've had as a principal that you've, grown the most from?
Well, I don't know, you know, and I was looking at this because you asked these questions and that, and I was looking at it, and I'm not so sure that I have overcome it or even grown from it. I just know that it is there. And I think the biggest, the hardest thing for being a principal is, you know, we're charged with a lot of different duties and tasks and responsibilities. One of the more important ones, so they say, is the instructional leader, you know, which equates out to, you know, you got to be in classrooms and working with teachers and working with, you know, students and things like that. The unfortunate part is that our job, at least in public schools, has so many other responsibilities to it that it's almost impossible to spend the amount of time that they want us to spend in classrooms and still
do all the other stuff.
Yeah, and still complete other stuff on time by deadlines and things like that. And so, you know, that's been, I think, the biggest challenge for me as a principal.
Did you or have you come up with a system for streamlining some of that stuff? Because that's kind of where I'm at. I'm in my first year, and you're talking about juggling all those different, you know, all those different jobs. What do you – or what's your – plan for how you plan?
Yeah, you know, and it's, and I know there's lots of places, you know, you got to plan everything, you know, you got to write it in your calendar, but you know, as well, I'm the only administrator at this school.
So you don't have an assistant or anything?
I have a dean of students who helps me with some minor disciplinary issues, but if we have a fight, drugs, alcohol, bullying, weapons, any of those things, harassment, any of those more serious issues, you know, I have to handle it. So if I could be in a class, you know, observing, you know, a civics class, but if my secretary calls and says, we had a fight, you need to get here, then,
right.
You know, you got to get there. So there's just a lot of different things that interfere with that supposed schedule that you have down, you know? And I know that in a perfect world, that's what we should do. I do try to do it to a certain extent. It just doesn't for me anyway, hasn't held up. And maybe that's you know, an inherent flaw in me. I don't know.
I think that's
still a work in progress.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Well, that's good. I know it's not just me. What's
No, sir.
You know, we talked in the beginning kind of about your passion for building relationships with your stakeholders. What are some tips or some things that you do to build those relationships with your parents and with your students and your staff? One of the things that I've come across is at the high school level, it's really difficult for me to get parental involvement. So if you have some tips in those areas, that would be fantastic.
Well, getting parents involved in high school is really a difficult project and goal. You will find that your 10 to 15% of your parents are going to be involved in everything, and they're going to be involved all the time. And getting others involved, there's a lot of barriers to it. Some have listed they don't feel comfortable, they don't feel welcome. But then when you talk to the parents who are involved, they do feel welcome. It's really hard to put your finger on how to get them more involved. I still personally think that a lot of people think that when their kids get to high school that, a big portion of their parenting
duties
responsibilities,
are over,
at least during the school day, ceases,
Yeah.
But we try as often as we can. We try to get information. We have a Facebook page. We try to get information on Facebook, because we know that even though parents may not have a car,
right,
they probably have a smartphone, and they probably have, if they don't have a computer, they have a smartphone, they have Facebook, and they have, those types of things. So we try to make, do all those. But it's like I tell my staff every time, and every year it starts out the same, that we're in the people business, and that's our product. We don't put out gasoline. We don't put out products, like phones or, we put out people. And so to think of them any other way than human beings, human breathing beings that you have to relate to as a human being, is really counterproductive. And so that's how I've always approached it, so that's one of our most important jobs. You got to build relationships with them.
What is your English to another language ratio?
We are between 85 and 90% Hispanic in our school district. That doesn't mean that we have our migrant or ELL population is probably around, we probably have at our high school right now, so whatever the percentage is, we probably have 5 kids who have minimal to low English proficiency.
Right.
And are primarily Spanish only. Now, we have lots of parents,
right,
who are Spanish only. So
how do you, what methods do you use to communicate with those?
Message that we send, any written document that we send, we always do it, have it translated in Spanish. Any message that goes out over, we have, like most school systems now, we have
automated calling system there.
Yeah, automated calling system and alert system and all sorts of things. You can use it for a whole variety of things. But anytime we put a message on, we also have to put that message on in Spanish as well. So, fortunately, we do have some people in the district who, are fluent.
Right.
So we're able to use their skills.
And we have, in our district, we have a 20% of our school population are ELL, or English is their second language. And
mm-hmm.
just not all one, but just figuring out, that's one of the challenges, is we have multiple languages being spoken, and just how do you connect
right.
with not just people from from the language standpoint, but the cultural standpoint, how do you, you know, bridge those cultural gaps that may be there?
That's difficult, you know, to understand their culture and, you know, how that plays into their decision-making, their, you know, all of that.
Have you done anything with your curriculum in terms of making it more applicable, or you just do what you do?
Well, you know, we do have, like I say, we have an ELL and a migrant program. You know, our kids are those kids who require bilingual education. We're able to deliver it in just about all of our subjects. And I think our staff does a pretty good job of making things relevant, you know. And I know our math teacher, from time to time when I've sat in there and observed one of our math teachers, you know, he'll address, you know, hey, when your dad gets up and goes in the field in the morning, you know, and they're talking some mathematical concepts or something like that.
Right.
You know, and it has to determine, you know, this and that. How do you think he does that, you know, or what process is he using? And so I know our teachers, most of our teachers do a pretty good job of blending, you know, something that's relevant to kids with the particular topic and content knowledge. So,
yeah, I think you got it right on the head right there. Just trying to make everything as relevant as possible, just to engage with the learning.
Right.
You know, you've been a principal for many years, and I was just wondering, for first few year principals, what is some advice that you would give to those of us just getting started?
Well, I wrote this down, and I'm not being facetious. I would say the first thing to do is to listen to people, and that's to all stakeholders, parents, kids, staff. You know, so often principals forget to listen to students, but I tell you what, students will give you more insight to what's happening in your school than anybody else. You got to listen, and then the next thing I put was ask questions and then listen some more. I think the first couple of years, you really, to get a feel for where your school is at, where they're going, you know, what's the culture, what are the expectations, because a lot of expectations in education are unwritten, you know.
Yeah, those unwritten norms, you bump into them without even realizing it.
Yep, and so, you know, the best way is to listen, ask questions, and listen some more, and listen to all stakeholders, you know, what's important. What's important to parents, you know, for those that you can talk to? Parent conferences, you know, basketball games, football games, you know.
Yep.
Band concerts, any of those things, you know, see what's important to them. And, you know, ask questions. And so, you know, those, you know, that is, you know, and then not only that, but your colleagues from around the district, you know, other principals, you know, superintendent, board members, you know, all of those will give you a feel for, you know, what the district is all about, what your school is all about, what are the written and then what are the unwritten expectations.
Yeah, like I said, those unwritten rules, you come in thinking you got all the answers, you do something. Like I when I came in, I moved the room because I was the only one here in the summer, and I moved one room to another room, and did not expect the reaction that I got when the teacher returned.
You would think that that's not a big deal, but it is.
Right. Well, that was a lesson learned. Last question for me. What are a couple of books that have had a great impact on your practice?
Well, there are three books that kind of, you know, stand out. One is Fullan's The Eight Forces of Change. I don't know if any of you read that. It's about change in the workplace, transformational change, any of that. And if you're in education, as you know, long enough, there's going to be change, you know.
Every year.
It's not if, It's not if, it's when, and then how are you going to deal with it, you know? Because it's here, so.
The eight forces of change. The eight forces of change.
You're right, the eight forces of change. Michael Fullan. Yeah. And then I don't remember these two first names, but Bowman and Deals, Leading with Soul. I read that way back in, probably in the mid-2000s.
Leading with Soul.
And really, it touched me because it's about you know, that we deal with people. That's what we deal with, you know, not products, not inanimate objects, people. And everybody has feelings. They all have emotions. They all have, you know, anxieties. They all have all of those things, and including us.
Yep.
So, you know, we need to make sure that we take those into account when we're dealing with them, you know?
Yep.
And then the most recent one that I read, Michael McDykes and Laurie DeSalto, Unwritten, The Story of a Living System. And it's a pathway to enlivening and transforming education. It's about, you know, our kids, the kids nowadays, and kids in 2017, come to us with a myriad of issues and anxieties and, you know, things that have happened to them that, you know, my generation, you know, did not deal with.
Right.
You know, so dealing with them and being a leader, you know, in that way, you know, you have to get down and dirty and understand what's going on with young kids and those emotions and those things that they're going through and how that affects how they do in school.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. He is on LinkedIn is where I first heard about it and found it. But if you get a chance to read it, it's really a good book. And it doesn't take you that long, but it's an excellent book.
And the title was Unwritten, The Story of Living Systems?
Of a living system, yes.
Living system. Well, that is it for this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur. Thanks for taking the time, Mr. DeYoung, and I will catch you on LinkedIn and Facebook.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. You keep doing what you're doing. It's a wonderful thing you're doing.
That was Mr. Craig DeYoung of Dexter High School. Three tips that he gave us were, anytime we put a message out, we got to put it out in Spanish as well. So if you have a multicultural student body, make sure that you are putting that information out in multiple ways so that everybody has access to that information. He also talks about how his staff makes the subject or the curriculum relevant to the different culture and the different cultural backgrounds in his school. And he also says that you'll find that 10 to 15% of parents are going to be involved in everything and are going to be involved all the time. And this is when we were talking about trying to improve parent involvement. And he also said, most importantly, that we're in the people business. We put out people. We were talking about how people are not products, and the jobs of the school is not to put out some sort of widget, but to put out a person who will benefit society. I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Mr. DeYoung. If you are interested in other episodes on The Principal Entrepreneur, please check out the other episodes on iTunes and Podomatic. If you are a principal, make sure you check out the new grant scholarship available that honors the hard work you put in on a daily basis. K-12 principals, go over to theprincipalentrepreneur.com or howtobeagreatprincipal.com and just click on the grant application link that you can find there. For more short articles and tips, they're also over there on the blog, and you can also pre-order my newest book, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies, over there as well. If you're an auditory learner, you are in the exact right spot. That is it for this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you next time.